The Pirates Roundtable on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by Goodrich & Geist, personal injury attorneys, regular guys protecting your rights. Online at goodrichandgeist.com.
Trib Live Radio presents the Pirates Roundtable Show.
You get out there and the stands are full and everybody's cheering. The bat just eases into it and meets that ball. And you know it's going to go a long way. Damn, if you don't feel like you're going to live forever.
Featuring Tribune Review Bucks beat writers Rob Beertemple, Travis Sawchick, and Bill West. 1 hour of the best Pirates talk right now on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome to the Pirates Roundtable. We have a full house today here in the Trib Live Radio studios. Bill West here with Rob Beertemple and Travis Sawchick to recap a short-lived postseason and what might be a pretty eventful offseason for the Buccos. But to start with the wild card, which seems like such old news at this point.
They lost,
and it wasn't very close either.
No, it was not. It's not very suspenseful.
Jake Arrieta did Jake Arrieta things. Was there?
Gerrit Cole did Bob Kipper things.
Yeah. Gerrit Cole not so sharp. You know, when we look back on that, were the lineups, I guess, the most surprising part of the game? I'm trying to think of like what was different, what was intriguing about it.
Well, the thing that struck me, and it was only with looking back and rethinking about it, because. And maybe I chide myself a little bit for not really noticing it, but the day before the game, you remember the press conferences, and they bring out the managers and the starting pitchers. And Arrieta wearing some kind of fishing cap or something, seemed very relaxed, very confident, very I'm going to take this and shove it kind of approach, and he didn't care. He was joking. And then you see Gerrit Cole come in, and he has his hat pulled down over his eyes and his hoodie on, and he's looking down at his feet and mumbling and, what a contrast, between the two guys. And I thought, but it really did in some ways seem to carry over into that game. I mean, Arrieta went and did what he, like you said, what he does. And Cole did what he maybe doesn't usually do. And you wonder if maybe some of that big game, all the hype, all the attention, maybe some of that got to Gerrit a little bit. And I think that was kind of the point maybe Rob Rossi was trying to make the next day. Not that Gerrit isn't or cannot be an ace, but in this time on the stage, when he was required to do a certain thing, he didn't live up to that type of pitcher.
Maybe he was too amped up.
Yeah.
He was up in the zone. But then again, this is a guy who in previous big moments, dating back to College World Series, has been pretty big, pretty good. Mm-hmm. So this is one of his worst big game performances. Mm-hmm. He was better on the road in the 2013 NLDS, and he only pitched on the road. So maybe the home environment got to him more than Arrieta. Who knows? But Cole was pitching well coming into this.
Yeah.
I mean, he beat the Dodgers, beat the Cubs, beat the Cardinals in succession. So he should have been confident too.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it was the whole clubhouse understanding the challenge before them, that he had to be perfect, basically. And that just as they weren't kind of celebratory when they clinched, I think there's just kind of this dark cloud hanging over them, the prospect of facing this very situation.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe in that sense, maybe they didn't take themselves out of it mentally weeks beforehand. I mean, they never really seemed like a playoff. You never had the feel that this was this team was in the postseason, that they were always kind of, well, we just got a job.
This was a season that fell short of their goal, which was to win the division and at least play in a postseason series. So maybe that was part of it.
They believed they could avoid the wild card. They could avoid Jake Arrieta. They were clinging to the belief that they could catch the Cardinals and win the division until the very bitter end, whatever that was, 4 or 5 games left. And at that point, then it was really awkward because it was, okay, they had to play to basically hang on to home field. And that's where, again, I agree with you, Rob, that they really kind of seemed like dead men walking at times. They didn't seem like a team particularly excited about the prospect of the postseason. It was more so, okay, we got knocked out of the division race. We're going to do what we have to do and basically take a bullet
instead
to
the
head.
Parrot, they should have had an Undertaker lead him onto the field or something.
Yeah, but it's hard. I will say Arrieta made mistakes in that game. Mm-hmm. He was good, but he left pitches. They did not – they fouled several balls back. McCutchen had a he had 2 hits, but I think he could have done more damage.
Yeah.
Arrieta made mistakes last night, and the Cardinals capitalized on some of those mistakes. So,
but the Pirates also just were somewhat victims of bad luck. I mean, there was that sequence of pitches or exit velocities that were all like 105 plus.
There was some bad luck
and stuff like that. Again, you just shrug.
But this is a team that needs. I think one of their big offseason focuses has to be on getting power. They fell from 6th to 23rd in home runs. Yeah. And if they get rid of Alvarez and maybe Neil Walker, then you're looking at a team, if you don't replace them with home run type bats, they could rank near the bottom of the game next year in home runs. Mm-hmm. And the Cubs capitalized mistakes. Schwarber hanging Gerrickle slider. We saw 6 home runs yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I think especially in the postseason where you don't see as many mistakes, if you can change a game with one swing,
yeah,
that's a big deal. And I think maybe the Pirates have to be careful with how they do handle Alvarez because he is the one bat that can change a game.
Yeah, but I think with...
Along with McCutcheon.
But power costs money. Power costs all kinds of things. And
Alvarez is going to be a relatively cheap 30 home run bat.
True.
Now, do you believe... I guess we can get into this a little later. Maybe we should attack it now, but... Do you, I mean, what would the expectation be for year two of Alvarez at first base? Would he be better? Would he be less of a liability? Would he play more often, be more comfortable? I mean, are you going to get what's the projected arbitration for him right now?
Eight.
So you could get 30-plus home runs for $8 million. Is his defense half as bad?
It's pretty bad.
Can it be half as bad next year?
Yeah, I mean, I guess
then you consider it, right?
It also matters. Then you start thinking about what kind of pitching staff are you putting together? Then too, starting rotation, is it a ground ball heavy pitching staff? And if it is,
right? I mean, it's a conundrum.
Yeah,
I think they.
And who do you replace him with if you do jettison Alvarez?
Yeah,
well, I mean, I think in Michael Morse, I would maybe use as a stopgap until Josh Bell is ready. I mean, all the talk, all the signs seem to point to Josh Bell will come up at some point next year. I mean, Morse wasn't terrible defensive. Mostly they didn't give him enough opportunity to prove himself as a first baseman one way or the other. They liked him so much as a pinch hitter. I think Pedro's defense is just really hard to justify. In theory, he'd have to get better next year. He couldn't be much worse, right?
But shouldn't the expectation be he will get better to some degree after a year of experience?
Yeah.
He's not going to be good.
They thought he might get better at third, and that didn't happen. And I think the fact that they didn't start him in the wild card game, and mid talk that some of that was not necessarily Clint's call, that was in part at least an analytical based decision that was suggested to Clint, and that shows me that right there the front office I think has lost confidence. If you're not willing to play your 30 home run bat in arguably the biggest game of the season. Well,
they did play him, though. He just didn't start.
True.
It's sort of like the basketball lineup argument. You didn't start, but you come off the bench in the fourth quarter or whatever. You play significant minutes. Wasn't that their plan was to try to keep the game close, and once it swings, we're down by 3 runs, then we're going to try to go with an offensive-minded lineup.
So, I don't really know what their plan was, to be honest. The more you look at it, it was like they really thought they could beat the Cubs 1-0, which, to go back to Gerrit Cole's psychology and maybe why he'd be over amped up for the game.
Yeah, no net.
They were saying, hey, Garrett, you need to pitch a shutout because Arrieta's probably going to do it too.
Yeah, if you can get a no-hitter, that'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be even better. But, yeah.
I don't know. I think they tried so many other things in the final month of the season with Aramis going. Why would you ask a 18-year veteran who had only played third base to go try first, even if it worked out reasonably well for the couple times he did it? Why would you try that if you had any faith in Pedro Alvarez coming around? Or at least you didn't want to shatter what little confidence and assurance he has left. I think they messed with Pedro. They, as Clint said at one point, they know what they had in Pedro, and they were moving on.
I think the best quote was, I think you got it, Travis, when you talked to, or somebody talked to Pedro. It wasn't me. It was either you or Bill. Let's enjoy the time we have left together.
Yes.
And I think that's probably measured
in that relationship probably isn't in a good place.
Yes.
Well, it was even when Pedro was asked after the game how he felt about the way that the whole starting Sean Rod at first base process was handled. Pedro tried to be diplomatic about it and said he appreciated the upfrontness, I think, is the term he used of Clint. Mm-hmm. So, he bristled, though, when I asked him when he found out he wasn't going to start. He didn't specify. He just said the appropriate time. So that was it. So I'm guessing.
I was there for that. He chose his words very carefully.
Yes.
And there was some time gaps between certain slots. So I don't know. Obviously, he was not very happy about that. But the Pirates went from coddling Alvarez for so many years to
tough love.
I don't know what you would call
this.
But at some point, performance. They were playing for a 1-0 game,
yeah,
which the way Arrieta was pitching the second half seems
kind of made sense.
Rational. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I still understand the argument, well, Alvarez is the one guy who can run into a pitch. Mm-hmm. Along with, I mean, I guess anyone can, but he has the highest probability of running into a pitch.
So I guess
it didn't matter though.
Part
right?
of the question in line with that, then maybe in, as you're deciding what to do with Alvarez, if you're putting on your Neil Huntington hat for a minute, I mean, are you also deciding what is this team going forward? What's your philosophy? What's your approach? Are you still a shift heavy, play to the ground ball pitcher kind of? Off, make the most of your first to third, second to homes kind of offense, or do you start to sell out and go in a different direction? Maybe as you've started to change your draft philosophy, does that change your major league team philosophy?
They're going to stay defense. This past year in the draft, they drafted almost no guys with power profiles.
Yeah,
and they always say again, the minor league managers, the Neil, everyone, always the power's the last thing to come. We want to see good batters before we see power batters.
They said that about Jose Tabata.
That's true for
years.
Some guys, but I mean, you still project guys well, as certain players. And these guys don't project as power hitters.
If you didn't do it in college, there's probably not a very good chance you're going to do it in the major league. Right. That's the one thing that jumps out at me. Right. They keep going with these middle infield types and athletic guys, but certainly not guys who had a long, strong. I mean, Bryant had a track record as a home run hitter in college, right? That was it. Then
Schwarber,
same thing. Schwarber. These guys could mash the ball. The guys that the Pirates drafted this year are not.
It's almost that Royals Giants blueprint. If we want guys who make contact, spray the ball around, can go against shifts, and those.
And
they also weren't drafted in a place to get power in the draft. Really, that power's at a premium.
Yeah,
and those guys are going early unless you're taking a chance on a guy who has significant holes or projections. There just aren't many power bats that are quality power bats, right?
Well, I mean, sometimes that's the thing. I think they want the best of both worlds, and sometimes on power guys, you have to take a little bit of a risk. You have to be willing to maybe take the guy who leans more power than zone discipline and profile. But again, Joe Delacarri this year, when they were talking about what they looked for, they said, we always believe in the bat first, and in particular, again, the ability to command the zone. That's their thing. So, I don't see them shifting more toward power. They know where they play. They are going to stand by defense, stand by ground ball pitching, winning games the way they have the past couple of years. I mean, that's what's gotten them back to this point as an organization. I don't think you need to drastically shift it when you just won 98 games. Just need a little bit better of a first baseman.
Then again, are they a team that will win 98 games but then go 0-1?
You wonder, are they at a high watermark here? When you have these Melanson, Walker, Alvarez, what do you do with them or the money they're owed? You have two rotation voids, unless you want Morton and Locke in the rotation. You have Andrew McCutchen, who is probably not going to get any better, right? He's either peaked or is maybe starting to slowly decline. Who's getting better on this team? How do they catch? The Cubs aren't going to get any worse. Right, I mean, this team's loaded. Cardinals aren't going anywhere. I think it's a challenging offseason. The most to get back into a position to contend for the division, it's going to be really tough.
Yeah, I think that
so much went right this season.
Yeah, and the window was open, but yeah, is it going to be? I don't know. I mean, the Cubs are ascending. I think everybody agrees with that, and they're they could potentially only get better.
Cardinals, Schwarber, Bryant, Russell, these guys are all rookies.
Yeah.
I mean, their bats are good. They're pitching, though.
Their bullpen, I'm sure that'll be a target to improve.
Yeah, this is going to be one of
David
the
David Price will probably be putting on a Cubs hat at some point.
One of the best free agent pitching markets in years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is scary. The fact that the Cubs have such a wealth of wealth. they got a lot of money. So I suppose if they want to go out and improve their pitching or, again, say, okay, a couple guys are, not as good as they were, just getting a little old for us. Let's go out and buy new pitchers, and they can. So, I suppose the Cardinals are going to be up there. I think they have their own, maybe not free agent issues, but certainly veterans that they have to start weighing the importance.
They just also got a new TV contract that is one of the top five in the game.
Well, I just saw today Forbes put out that the Pirates had the third highest average local ratings of any team in the majors. The Royals were dominating, and then the Cardinals, and then the Pirates. So there's an audience. Obviously, the Pirates, the TV contract is, I guess, be negotiated better. Yeah. But we'll see how that goes. But In terms of what to do with Pedro, I don't see him coming back. I just don't know what you could trade him for either. I guess that's the problem.
Yeah, that's part of the because there's enough buzz about the Pirates. They've tried since since at least last offseason to deal him and have been rebuffed. I don't know what to do now. Now when you try to trade into somebody and they said, "Well, where'd you play him in the wild card game?" Well, we kind of actually had him on the bench.
We got him in the third inning.
But yeah, once we.
I'm sure they will try to move him to an American League team that needs a DH. I'm sure that's what they've been trying to do. Mm-hmm. But there's been no takers to date.
Yeah. I mean, you just wonder how much have they been asking in return, and do they keep lowering that standard to the point where, again, it's like how they got at Ramos Ramirez. Here, we'll give you – just give us anything. We'll give you Pedro for it.
I don't know. I mean, he's not a perfect player, but their replacements are almost – their internal options are certainly not attractive.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's the only arbitration guy that I think might realistically, if Melanson and Walker, 10-plus million, mm-hmm. Walker, or Alvarez might be the only guy who can perhaps produce a surplus value on this contract next year.
Yeah.
And he doesn't fit in ideally with their ground ball plan at all, but just looking at pure what might he do if he improves defensively and hits 30 home runs, he'll be relatively cheap if he can do. If he's only a 15-error first baseman.
I wonder if Walker's gone, and again, everything we've, all indications seem to point that Neil Walker will not be back for one reason or another.
I think that depends on...
Well, that's right. You're hanging on to the Jung Ho recovery thing. After the game, Neil talked like a guy who seems like he doesn't think he's coming back. Again, there's a lot that hinges, and we'll see in the next couple of months, but... if we move with the assumption that it's more likely, I guess, that he doesn't come back. If they get a second baseman with better range, does that offset the weakness of Pedro at first base? Because then at least you can say, okay, Josh, you have to get to all these ground balls that go kind of in that space between first and second.
I think it would be intriguing that if people were clamoring so much for Hanson to come up, what if they hang on to Pedro? Start Hanson, say. Let's assume Jung Ho is not ready at the start of the year, and you put Hanson at second base. You got Josh at third. Now you have a first year big league, you have a rookie second baseman who's,
young.
Young and not green, proven. And also at times has had trouble listening to authority, by all reckoning. Along with a first baseman who sometimes plays the position like he's a third baseman and wants to get every ball, I can see collisions. I can see I see a lot of things that are going to make people throw their giveaway items onto the field.
Awkward stares, for sure. Just kind of awkward, like, I thought that was your ball kind of thing. Yeah, there's going to be some miscommunication. It's going to be, a delicate dance for the first couple weeks, no matter who they put out there next year, because you're either going to have Pedro in year two of that experiment, you're going to have Morse, who, again, hasn't really gotten a lot of time at first, or whatever other alternative they go with. And again, second base, we don't really know, especially if Walker is not at second, then that's a whole new experience there. Even turning double plays, they've been so good at that, because it's been Mercer and Walker, or before that, Walker and Clint Barnes. So
I guess that's a part of the equation that I haven't thought much about it is Michael Morse. I mean, he does so much get overlooked. Can you survive a year with Michael Morse at first base? I don't know. We haven't seen much of him. I haven't seen enough of him playing to form any kind of opinion. From what by all accounts, his defense is passable, at least. Is average. Maybe a tick above. I don't know. And how much are they paying him? Well, he's signed for $8 million, but the fact that that nobody over there is talking about how much the Dodgers are picking up makes me think that the Dodgers picked up a significant chunk of that. And maybe most of that was even this year, but still, the Pirates aren't going to pay $8 million. He signed for $8 million, but I'm reasonably sure the Pirates are not going to have to pay $8 million to him.
Why would the Dodgers pay his contract?
Because they have $11 billion.
But I mean, they didn't get back anything. They got
true.
Thabit was owed money.
Mm-hmm. The Pirates,
I thought it was just an ugly contract swap.
I think to a degree, but I mean, I've heard that the Dodgers kicked in some cash. So even if it's $1 million, he's still less than Pedro.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe that's your option. You figure, let's go into the season and see what Morse can give us. If you can, again, if you can find a taker for Pedro, and that's the big if. But you see what we can do with Morse, and then if that doesn't work, well, then we just sort of come up with Plan B again, which is how they've approached other things in the past.
Corey Hart, part two, three, oh, whatever. Mm. Ancient Corey Hart.
Or maybe they take the bid the farm and get Chris Davis.
Well,
okay, I was just dreaming.
They need I think that is a key position, though, because they need power. Well, they need
been a key position.
They need a middle order cog. It's been an issue for 20 years, 22 years. That'd be a good place to make an upgrade or get more out, do something.
As I said the day before the Wild game, I was talking.
But as of right now, I think Alvarez is still their best option until a replacement.
I think they made a good move by bringing Kevin Young back this year. I think they made a bad move by not activating him on the 25-man roster. So
yeah, but wasn't Pedro's however many errors he finished with the most since Kevin Young? I think Kevin Young did 99.
Yeah, Kevin was no Gold Glove.
He made 23 errors in 99, but he made 17 the next year.
So, improvement?
So
Is
it George Scott who made 24 errors in 77, the most since Alvarez's and Young's 23? He made 11 the next year. So, hey, there's hope. Alvarez could not be a terrible first baseman, just merely a bad first baseman.
I certainly think he can't do worse, but...
He was really... The strange thing about this is he only made one fielding error at third base the year before. He was... Balls he got to, he fielded cleanly.
Well, that was one that he was charged with, too. I remember thinking there were probably at least three or four more that he could have been charged with. A couple balls that went off his glove.
But he played reasonably well. He did not throw the ball well.
True.
At third, you mean?
Yeah, at third.
Yeah,
but then he goes at first, and it's complete, as we all saw. I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
But it's... What an interesting offseason, because you don't even know... What do they do with their internal question marks before they even go outside the market and say, what could we do to upgrade and what fits might there be?
That's why the arbitration offers, the non-tenders come out was the week before the winter meetings. So I would think that the week before and that week after the weekend is going to be a pretty intense time if you're working for Neil Huntington because...
Yeah.
There's a lot of cell phone usage.
And then the other complicating factor is when is Gong back and 100% effective?
Yeah.
We don't have a clear idea of the timetable at this point, I don't think.
And God forbid he runs into Chase Utley at the Target or something and gets kneecapped.
And yeah, how about that? How does Ruben Tejada come back sooner than Gong? That's just bad luck.
Yeah, well, that talking with some orthopedic people, the Gong injury, it was a tough spot, and he was lucky in a way that there was no ACL damage, because a lot of times you get that, they do the initial surgery to repair the leg, and then they go back and have to repair the ACL later. But according to Neil Huntington, told me that the ACL came out clean, that there was no tear there, so it actually could have been a lot. It could have been worse.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been completely obliterated knee, but still broken bone and torn meniscus. Not
nothing to sneeze at.
No, not ideal at all. I only saw the replays of Chase Utley's slide. I mean, because that was of course a debate among the Pirate Twitter fans was the Gong slide more malicious or?
I think Utley's
dirtier.
Was more malicious.
Yeah, the Utley one to me. And they're all bad. I don't really see the purpose of any. I know the whole break up the double play thing, but I'm starting to believe more in the philosophy of these guys get paid a lot of money, and it's not necessarily so anyone can watch takeout slides. I don't think it's why people watch baseball, but to each his own, I guess.
Well, that's part. You're getting higher paid players and arguably better, finer tuned skill wise, but you're also getting less. It's becoming less of baseball and more,
Yeah, but was baseball ballet. Ever defined by takeout slides? I feel like that's just it's a small part of the game.
I remember reading about Ty Cobb.
Those guys did all kinds of crazy stuff.
Well, that was baseball, baby.
Yeah, 1920.
I don't think Cobb was as particularly beloved for his.
No, he
techniques.
Wasn't beloved. Yeah.
And the other thing is, these are your middle of the diamond players. Some of your most important players. Yeah. You don't just like catcher. You don't hard to replace. And
eventually we'll have automatic umpires and replay everything.
Just slide
will
to the
slide
just slide to the base.
Yeah, that's
slide
all.
Before the base and into it. It's really a simple
change. Joe Torre apparently said they were going to work on enforcing rules where you have to slide to the base in the Arizona Fall League, and he said we'll see how that goes. As if like. What is this new thing we're going to try? Sliding into bases. It's crazy. you've been doing it for a long time. Just not as a rule. All right. Well, we have to go to a commercial break here, but we will be back on Pirates Roundtable.
Go to the fridge, get a cold drink.
Game faces every day at Goodrich and Geist. Pursuing justice for real people. Online at goodrichandgeist.com. Injured? Do you have a case? Call Goodrich and Geist at 412-766-1455. Goodrich and Geist, located at 3634 California Avenue in Pittsburgh. Goodrich and Geist, attorneys at law. Online at goodrichandgeist.com.
The Pirates Roundtable on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by Goodrich and Geist, personal injury attorneys, regular guys protecting your rights. Online at goodrichandgeist.com.
Trib Live Radio presents the Pirates Roundtable Show.
You get out there and the stands are full and everybody's cheering. The bat just eases into it and meets that ball. And you know it's going to go a long way. Damn, if you don't feel like you're going to live forever.
Featuring Tribune Review Bucks beat writers Rob Beer Temple, Travis Sawchick, and Bill West. 1 hour of the best Pirates talk right now on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the Pirates Roundtable here on Trib Live Radio. Bill West joined by Rob Beer Temple and Travis Sawchick. We were discussing the various arbitration free agent kind of possibilities that the Pirates will confront here in the next couple weeks, months. And Neil Walker, Pedro Alvarez have been everyone's favorite topics for a number of reasons. But Mark Melancon, I think, is an interesting question mark. Pun not intended. Does he come back, Rob?
He's at he set a franchise record for saves. He's arbitration eligible for the final time before heading to free agency. He's not a what you think of as a closer, not a guy who's going to go out there and mow people down. Even he admits that, I think he was only half kidding when he said that, yeah, it's fun going out there getting saves with an 85-mile-an-hour fastball. He's at the same point of his career in a way that Joel Hanrahan was whenever Mark Melancon became a Pirate, because Hanrahan was traded. I think all the signs are there, and I'm talking to a lot of people in that clubhouse, that they fully expect Mark Melancon to go somewhere this winter and then return for a couple of pieces or whatever, and that's kind of the Pirates' way. I mean, that when you're building a championship club, the last thing you can usually figure on putting in place is your closer. And they have guys who could close. They have options. I think they might start to explore them.
Travis?
Yeah, I think he's another contender to be elsewhere next year. Mm-hmm. And the saves record, we all know about that, but a 3-year decline in wins above replacement, ERA for the traditionally minded person, 3-year decline in fielding independent pitching, 3-year decline in velocity. Now, his velocity was up at the second half, but overall, 3-year trends are all still a very good pitcher, but the arrows are pointing not directly down, but kind of a slow, gentle arrow pointing down. And he's a guy who you probably have to pay, say they're $100 million payroll next year, who knows. But if he's $10 million, do you pay 10% of payroll to a guy who throws less than 80 innings?
Especially when you have Tony Watson and whoever else they might consider waiting in the wings, whether it's Soria, Caminero.
I think he's a guy they'd like to move.
Yeah.
I think they like the player, they like the person, but they don't like the cost to that position. They don't want to pay for a closer. And arbitrators like saves, right? The people making these decisions aren't looking at FIP necessarily. They're looking at saves.
Yeah.
And 51's going to jump out.
That's
and
a big number.
That's a big number, and he's going to get paid. And just like Hanrahan and Grilly, I think the Pirates' history is to move closers when they become too expensive or when you get a good return.
Yeah, and it's hard to to disagree with that, because they've had the one thing that they've really been able to do unerringly every year is put together an outstanding bullpen.
Yeah.
And it's just a knack that Neil and his guys have that really they've taken, whether it's guys who haven't proven themselves yet or guys who are cast-offs or guys that have good upside but haven't just met it yet, they find those guys and get them and different pitching styles and everything, and they put together good groups.
Yeah. And Hurdle said he thinks Tony Watson's a future closer.
Yeah.
He said that before, so he might be the future's now.
Much like, when he hints at Josh Harrison and liking him at second base. When Clint starts throwing out hints, that's usually a bad sign for the future. But we'll see. So we're all in agreement then Mark Melancon probably is not a Pirate next year.
I would go further. Yeah, I would say more than probably. Most likely.
But what about the argument that if they do indeed choose that route, are they undervaluing what were they, 80-1 when leading after seven innings? Mm-hmm. Melanson was very good after April. Are they undervaluing the role of closer and how good they were in the back end? Just to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, well, no, I think it depends how you replace the middle pieces more so than replace the closer. I think you could put Watson in there and be good. But you're right. They need to get better. They need to get good bridges.
Well, and they've again found an ability to do
Holdscomb.
That. Yeah. Well,
where's
yeah.
Holdscomb, Bill?
I think he's back in the independent league in North Dakota or whatever it is. Maybe he's back in Nova Scotia.
I have to admit that was one thing that surprised me when I was doing the year end thing that he's still in the 40-man. I was like, oh my, yeah. How's about that?
I guess they're holding out hope after not using, like, he barely even pitched in the minors this year. Whatever, we're not getting into it. I don't know if they see Soria as a potential setup man to Watson, or
he's a free agent.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah, if they want to bring him back, that's the important thing. Actually, is one that
Joe Blanton's also a free agent.
Right. Like Blanton had a great year, but he's expensive. Yeah. Right. So do they bring Blanton back? Because he certainly proved his worth and proved mm-hmm. himself valuable. But again, do you pay that for?
I don't think at this price. I think he'd have to come down or at least stay stable. And why should he do that? That's one of the things when you come off of you whenever you know you.
You were
that's why I think it could be tricky to sign Jay Happ, because yes, he would like to come back. Yes, the Pirates would love to have him back, and yes, there's a number that could make it work. But he's also, this is the first time he's really going to be able to be a free agent, because he's been traded or extended or whatever before. Now he can be a free agent, and he can say, I just went, what was it, 7-2 with a 1.39 or whatever the heck it was over the last couple of months of the season. What's that worth to you?
Yeah, it's their free agent pitchers that are because I think this is the most free agents they've had in the Huntington era. Mm. And it's the pitchers that are real, because they combine for like 7 WAR, and mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be tough to replace.
Yeah.
Their free agent position players are basically non-entities, yeah. But the pitchers, they have some significant voids.
That leads in a question from Mario. Even though his thing is at Tyler or something or other. But anyway, Mario says that, do you think the Pirates should focus on picking up at least one more starting pitcher this offseason?
Well, they're definitely going to focus on it.
I think just like the focus started there last year with Liriano, and Burnett has to start there again.
Yeah.
Until and then you hope that Glasnow is ready in June.
Mm-hmm. And Tyon, I mean, of course, we haven't talked about that in a couple of weeks, but you know, the guy hasn't thrown a meaningful game situation
since his first outing in the Arizona Fall League, if you want to call that.
I was gonna say, yeah. I don't know if we even count the Arizona Fall League as particularly demanding, yeah. But this guy hasn't pitched in any serious minor league competition, let alone obviously major league. And by then it'll be several years. That's got to be a little scary, as a prospect to the Pirates. And I'm sure they're not going to admit it. They're going to stand by him and say we believe in the stuff, but. Boy, I don't know.
Yeah, he can't be in their plans for next year. I mean, maybe he asserts himself. He's healthy and is amazing. But it just when you're planning this out right now, he can't be in the plans. 2017.
Yeah, or maybe
7 years after he's drafted.
Yeah. I mean, maybe later next year. Wow. But anyone who thinks that Tyon's going to be some sort of like May June call up there, I don't know what they're thinking.
And I think, once Jameson gets back on the mound, he, it wouldn't surprise us, his velocity be really good and all that, but it's like pitch execution. Gerrit Cole was better this year because he stayed healthy, mm-hmm. repeat delivery, repeat mm-hmm. things you're working on. Tyon hasn't had a chance to do that for 2 years.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a lot of makeup ground. Because most pitching injuries, we see guys down 1 year, 2 years is kind of a rare.
Yeah. There
was 2 full seasons. You don't see that too often.
Plus, you wonder what bad habits he developed while he was trying to work through, work back through rehab, and then he had mm-hmm. the oblique injury. And I mean, Charlie Morton talked ad nauseum for the first month after he came back about, the bad habits he developed as a result of trying to compensate for his hips. So again, truthfully, we don't know where Jameson stands. He might not be major league ready ever because it's just been that long. I don't want to be the doom. Doom and gloom guy, but it has to be at least a possibility that this is a guy who will never be a major league pitcher just because injuries have knocked him off track.
At least I think he is in the right organization though. Jim Benedict and mm-hmm. Searidge and the philosophies they have, they've helped a lot of guys. So the silver lining is probably in a pretty good organization too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you mentioned, it's interesting, it's got me thinking, even before this stuff about Rick Sofield came out, is I was starting to think...
we need to talk about Rick Sofield.
Yeah. So, what is? I mean, eventually, I mean, I would like to know, and I'm sure you know that it would be difficult to find out, but we could eventually pull it off. What they're doing and what they will have to do to keep Ray Searidge on this staff in the future, because they're at the point now where they're starting to lose guys. They lost Banny to the Texas Rangers. They lost Del Piano. Sofield is interviewed. Ty interviewed. You know, people were starting to pick. I don't want to say pick from the carcass.
The brain drain.
But yeah, yes. Yeah.
Success
and
people want
to. The Phillies tried to get Benedict a couple of years ago to be their pitching coach, and the Pirates threw a big bag of gold his way. You know, I wonder how much. You know, there's probably have teams that have approached them about Ray Searidge, and you would think it's going to happen again if it already hasn't happened this offseason.
It has to have happened by now. I mean, you just think with the success, and yeah, probably will continue to happen as much, if not more so, again, just because of what happened with J-Hap and all the bullpen guys. People have to be like, wow, this guy, he's a miracle worker, as was often joked in Pittsburgh. So, yeah, he has to be the top priority then for Huntington, right, in terms of coaches that you want to hang on to?
I would think, yeah. Last thing you want to see is him wearing a Cubs hat.
And you don't have to pay $10 million to keep a coach, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a cheaper
or do
investment.
You, at a certain point, I don't know.
What's the average pitching coach make in baseball?
Yeah,
much less than whatever the average starting pitcher is.
Well,
so.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And the value added, got to keep
exactly.
that guy. Him and Benedict. It's really a team,
are,
and they need to keep both of those guys.
They do complement each other in a lot of ways.
I mean, I'm sure they'll try, but again, if like I said, the Cubs come along with their super deep pockets, does it make any difference to them?
Yeah.
They say, hey, no, we'll pay $10 million. You know, what difference does it make to us? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you hang on to those guys. And again, Huntington talked about, you know, he still views it as a good thing. It's a testament to where the organization is. But does that mean Neil has, you know, cards up his sleeve that he's waiting to play? Does he have guys in the flanks, whether it's a you know, Fox or Fitzgerald, some of the analytics guys that maybe step into, not certainly pitching coach roles, but you know, fill in for a Ty Brooks or whatever?
Coaches are, you know, in a way they're kind of like play. I mean, they want to win. That's they you know, they do want to win. They want to be on good teams. And if you're a pitching coach, you know, instead of, you know, no offense to the Pirates maybe necessarily, but I mean, instead of getting a group every year and having to work wonders for that group to resuscitate careers, to rebuild guys, if you're putting in a situation where you're the pitching coach and look, here's the free agents, who do you want? Then we'll go get them for you.
Yeah, but
and that's
why
the coaches are more important here, because in other organizations you're getting grade A quality product to work with.
Yeah.
Here you're getting fixer. You're flipping homes here.
But if you're a home flipper, which is, again, to follow the metaphor, what Ray Searidge has done so well, do you want, you know, studs that come in? Because maybe they have their own opinions of how things work, and they don't want to listen to you. And
makes your days a lot shorter, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it's all what Searidge is looking for. Yeah. Again, he's done so well with these, you know, cast-offs and fixer-upper types. That maybe is his strength. And again, I just think about, you know, they talk about Arrieta when he was with the Orioles, and they tried to make him pitch their way, and it didn't work. And then he went to the Cubs, and they said, "Okay, do whatever works for you." And that played out well. So, you know, I don't know if Searidge is sitting and waiting for that situation where he can say, "Yeah, just do your thing," or does he like it when he says, "No, we need you to pitch the two seamer, we need you to be a sinker ball guy, and you know, pitch the ground balls, things like that." So. I don't know. We wish we had more time to talk to the man. He's always so busy working wonders in the outfield with the pitchers.
He would have more time if it was the Cubs. I got to taste Lester's days. I'm just going to let Lester and Arrieta do their thing. I can talk to you guys all you want.
So how was Rick Sofield with your phone call the other day?
He sounded like he had just like come back from Disneyland, which I guess in a way he had. It came down that they played Sunday in Cincinnati. No, against Cincinnati in the regular season. He went back to his, I guess, apartment or his you know, home here in Pittsburgh. He said, I had my robe on. And I guess him and the wife were just settling in to watch a movie. He didn't see what the movie was. And his text message thing bleeped. He picks up and it was this cryptic note from Clint saying, call Neo ASAP. And Sofield was like, what did I do? He says, I'm trying to think. What did I do? He almost didn't call me. He's like, well, you know, right away. Because I'm like, what did I do to screw something up today on a Sunday night? So, and then it was Neil saying that we've given permission to the Padres to talk to you, and you fly out tomorrow morning. So he flew to San Diego from Pittsburgh. It was in, basically landed, got off the plane, went right to Petco Park, spent 5 hours in an office talking to their GM and other people. And then another 5 hours on Tuesday, and then flew back to Pittsburgh either late Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning. Stumbled out of the plane, put on his uniform, and walked onto the field to coach the Wildcats. He said, "You know, he wished he would have had a little bit more to do at third base in that game." But he said it was a fantastic interview. He had a great time. He's really, he says, after being with Clint, you know, he really has that itch to manage. So
what a team to manage, though.
Yeah.
Messy Padres with their crazy GM who just, like, sold the farm and only watched it blow up in his face.
I thought they won the offseason.
They did won the offseason, yes.
They very much lost the regular season, though.
I forget who won spring training. It wasn't them, though.
You don't usually see the jump from base running third base coach to manager. But does that speak to people who are curious what the Pirates are doing? And let's go at least talk to their people, if not hire them.
I think
worked out well for Texas because Bannister's done a fine job there, as we all know.
I think there was some of that to a degree that teams
he's
improving.
A bench coach who's more of an integral part of planning and preparation, all that. This would be more of a leap.
But especially since they're also going to talk to Ron Gardenhire, who had a little bit of experience with the Twins as a manager,
just a little bit,
and a few other people. So it'd be interesting. But it's the first time he's ever interviewed for a big league managerial job.
Yeah, good for Rick.
Good guy.
I mean, I'm sure he'd do great with the media. That's a big part of the managing job, whether people want to admit it or not. And Sofield would be excellent at dealing with the media, especially coming off Pat Murphy, who maybe not so great with the media.
I asked Rick what advice Clint had given him about how to deal with the media, and Rick just laughed. So I don't know what to make of that. But he has taken a lot of tutoring from Clint Hurdle.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. And again, that's still early stages. He might not get that. Same thing with Ty Brooks, as far as we know, isn't going anywhere, hasn't gone anywhere. So.
Right, yeah. I mean, they filled the gig in Milwaukee, but he's one of those guys that other clubs will look at. I think there's a few guys over there that other teams will look at. And not just this year, but next and beyond.
We actually tie it all back together. We kind of talked about this a couple of shows ago, but Ty Brooks credited with at least partially finding Jung Ho Gong, certainly leading the push out there. Byung Ho Park, when going back to the first base woes, do we think the Pirates have any chance of getting him?
Some chance, sure, but I don't think they're going to
low
get
chance.
Him. Yeah, they're not going to get
him. They're a victim of their own success with Gong.
Yeah, because the word's out now, and I know of at least two other organizations that are going to make serious offers for this guy. So the Pirates won't be able to sneak by with what they offer. What was their posting fee? Was like $5.78 or something. And
but if they believe he can hit and he can provide power, he's still going to be cheaper than a major league free agent. So they should invest aggressively if they believe that.
I mean, that's I guess a big question mark. Park, for those who aren't aware, KBO star slugger first baseman. I think he's league MVP like two of the past 3 years. In theory, even more impressive on the offensive side than Gong. But part of the reason, at least Travis, I think you talked about this Gong's defense, they liked Gong as a complete player. They didn't just look at his numbers offensively and say, wow, this guy's awesome. Park seems more like, he's a first baseman.
It's all about the bat.
Right. So
if that fails, he's not really a utility guy or a guy who can...
Right. And he has to profile the right way, too. I mean, Gong...
He's right-handed, right? Or is he left-handed?
I think he's
right. I think he's right-handed, but I'm not...
Actually, yeah, he is, because I've seen his crazy bat flips. He does insane bat flips.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He'd have to tone that down.
Yeah, probably.
So this isn't an ideal fit for a right-handed hitter, but if the power's real, you go do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess...
So Jose Abreu, Baseball America pegged the Pirates as a team that they thought either should or could go get Abreu, and he turned out to be value.
Yeah,
so if you believe these guys can hit, they're going to be cheaper than your major league alternatives.
Yeah. I mean, there are no other foreign prospects out there, no Cubans or anything like that, as far as we know, that the Pirates are going after.
Yeah.
None of the big name guys, anyway. So, and Park, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. I agree. I think whether it's a Yankees or Red Sox or, the Cubs, why not?
You got to figure the posting fee at least doubles, if not triples, if not quadruples.
Yeah, I'm going to think triple. I think $15 million to get him.
And I don't see the Pirates playing in that neighborhood for a posting fee.
No.
Never know.
You never know, but it just doesn't fit what they typically do.
Agreed.
I wonder if they're surprised they won the Gong bid.
I think
Neil. I asked Neil that. Like, were you surprised that you won? You're like, whoa, hey, look. He's like, wow. He wouldn't. He just. We made a bid we thought would be competitive. So there's that.
In other words, kind of yes.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of jaw dropping in the office on Federal Street whenever that happened.
Well, and that it worked out. I mean, that's the next thing. Again, they not only get Gong, but you know, then he becomes their arguably go-to shortstop down the stretch.
Yeah, man, he was getting better as the year went along, which was testament to not his intellect as a player and his ability to make adjustments. Mm-hmm. When do we think he's going to be back?
May. I think later.
I think they were saying end of May, maybe even start of June.
Oh. Whether that was worst case. I mean, worst.
Yeah, worst
six,
case scenario.
6 to 8 months, which March to May was the range. But, yeah, I think it's going to be later rather than sooner.
Do you think that impacts the Walker situation? Or are they going to make a decision on Walker independent of Gong's timetable?
It's hard to say. I mean, because that's, you know, 10. I guess some of it might be, boy, $10 million. I just keep coming back to that, and I'm trying to think of the, you know, take the list of all the Pirates who have made $10 million. All right, you know, that's a lot of dough.
I mean, is the belief that they trade Walker as opposed to again just?
Is it beyond the realm of possibility that they jettison Walker, and they have Michael Morse? Boy, who could they put at third base? Who has experience at third base? Who they might still have team control for, like, say, this one more year.
No, I don't think they're going back there.
No, I don't. I'm not sure he would agree to that. Would that be the ultimate insult? Be, hey, go play third base again.
The throw-in wasn't there either. At the those issues were never. He did make occasionally strong, accurate throw, but
I just thought it was interesting. The day before the wild card game, Pedro was taking grounders at third. He did not take grounders at first base the day before that game.
He's getting ready for the office. He's getting ready for his new home.
Yeah.
Maybe another team would try it.
True.
I think he's just bored. Pedro is just bored. He knew he wasn't starting. He said was kind of jerked around so much in the final month. I think he enjoys the teammates, and I think the teammates enjoyed Pedro, but he's just got to be a little bit tired of Pittsburgh at this point.
Yeah. I tried to get him to... You know, I tried to bait him into that, but I asked him at the end of the game after the wild card if he was eager just to have a normal season, because, you know, where he's not bothered by injury, where he's not moving to a new position. You're just looking forward to a normal season. And not necessarily trying to get him to say, yes, why not? It's not here in Pittsburgh. But he just looked at me and says, that's a weird question. And then he didn't answer.
So that'll be the Pedro legacy.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So any other outgoing players that we haven't...
Sean Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Free agent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, free agent. I can't... Light heavyweight champion of the world. You know?
I don't...
He's an exciting guy.
I don't know. Do they keep him around?
No, I don't think so.
I think he's
They brought
gone.
Travis Ishikawa back.
Well...
If his team will bring back Travis Ishikawa...
Yeah, but that was later.
That was also bargain basement money, too. So.
Right, right.
But they may make an offer or make a stab at it. But I don't think it's something they necessarily pursue aggressively.
I mean, they got to give Alan Hansen a shot somewhere in the majors sometime soon, right?
They have some cheaper in-house alternatives.
Yeah, I think they'll
namely Hansen.
They'll try him at second or short or third. Yeah, he can kind of play that role.
Hansen's a guy they tried to trade in the past too, though.
Yeah, well, again, there's a lot of guys they could trade. Of course, that's, you know, the Wily Pirates. Their off-season moves. I mean, again, at this point last year, the show didn't exist. But if it did, no one would have said, "Well, yes, Francisco Cervelli is going to be a stud at catcher, and Jung Ho Gong is going to be their go-to."
That's what I wanted to ask you, Travis. Do you give Cervelli a 3-year deal? 2-year deal?
Yeah, 3. If it's reasonable, I would.
So he's a keeper in your mind.
I think he is. Mm-hmm. Agree?
I agree, yeah. I think he proved this year he's got...
I don't know if he can be durable. Like, he gets hit so much.
He does.
He took a beating, and the injury history is the one thing that gives you pause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when he's played, aside from the throw-in, and I spoke to some scouts who thought his foot issue might have affected his throw-in this year, but aside from his throw-in, he gives you almost everything you want, save for power. Yeah. Again, there's no power on this team.
Yeah.
Mercer, Harrison's at second. Cervelli, Polanco in right field.
Yeah.
McCutcheon, yes. Marte, yes. Not ideal necessarily, but
you don't necessarily
yes.
look for power out of your catcher, though. Especially he hits for.
But I'm just well. Exactly. But I'm saying another position that doesn't have power on this
right.
team.
Yeah.
If you part ways with Walker and Alvarez, Gong, yes.
Yeah.
What if you sign Matt Wieters this winter? Put him at first.
Could. I mean,
speaking of power.
Again, but yeah, to your question, Rob, I think Cervelli's a guy you reach at least to a bridge to the Reese McGuire's of the world.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough. Is Diaz, is he a first division starter? Is he a backup? What
the
is
fact
he?
We didn't even hear, didn't even see him yeah. come out to check his shadow during the final couple of weeks of the season makes me think that, you know, he's not really.
He's not a guy you want as a starter on yeah. a contender at this point,
right.
I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
Agreed. Maybe a Chris Stewart replacement eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, I mean, did he get the field at all?
No. Well, he
could.
Might have hit one.
He could. Did he catch, though?
I don't think he did catch.
No.
Not just bullpen.
No.
Well, we'll have to wait and see about Elias Diaz next year, I guess.
And we'll leave on that note.
And we'll leave on the Elias Diaz note. I never
right.
thought we would have that.
It's a real cliffhanger for next season.
Tune in.
We might have some off-season.
Although we are planning some off-season shows, right?
Yes, so yes. We just don't know when yet, so stay tuned. Keep your eyes on
Elias Diaz updates.
All right, well, thanks for listening to the Pirates Roundtable on Trib Live Radio.
Game faces every day at Goodrich and Geist. Pursuing justice for real people. Online at goodrichandgeist.com. Injured? Do you have a case? Call Goodrich and Geist at 412-766-1455. Goodrich and Geist, located at 3634 California Avenue in Pittsburgh. Goodrich and Geist, attorneys at law, online at goodrichandgeist.com.